On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we ask if you could go to only one game this season, which one would you go to? We ask what Bryan Edwards' trade to the Atlanta Falcons means for the Raiders' new offense, and did the New York Times just do a good old-fashioned hit job on the Las Vegas Raiders? And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags,
RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. Playing a little injured, a little soreness in the neck, a little soreness in the back, moving around the shoulder. Been to a chiropractor four times, gotten two massages, two trigger point injections, and still no idea what's going on. So if I'm fidgeting in my chair, no, I don't have to take a dump. I'm just trying to figure out a way to like rest my shoulder and back where it doesn't hurt.
You might.
Don't worry about me too much.
You might have to take a shit. You might have to take a shit. Let's not.
I would much rather be in a position where I have to take a dump and I can just wear diapers and the problem solved. And now I'm just kind of like moving the whole left side of my body, trying to figure out where it's not going to hurt. But that's not your problem. Question of the day. I like this one. I was thinking about today, as coincidentally, while I was taking a dump, and I was looking at the Raiders schedule, and I was thinking, all right, what games am I going to go to, right? There's some awesome games coming up. And I thought to myself, let's get into it here. If you could only attend one game this season, which one would it be? Right? A real Sophie's choice. If you could only go to one.
It's a lot of good choices.
Which one would it be? Because there are some great choices.
There are some bangers right? out there.
So here's a look at the schedule. Obviously, we play in the toughest division of football. Any one of those home or away games are great. And in all fairness.
And we're playing the second toughest in the NFC West.
In the NFC West, right? And those are some great cities, right? Denver, cool town. Kansas City, for being a small, like,
it's a nice little town, Kansas, man.
If you're just spending a weekend, if you're just doing like flying Friday night, hang out Saturday, hang out Sunday, fly out Monday, you'll have a good time. If you're there for a week or two, you'll get bored. But it's got cool downtown. Los Angeles.
If you fly in Friday night or Friday afternoon-ish evening, have Friday night all day Saturday, maybe Sunday morning to hang in Kansas City, you'll have a good time.
Yeah, it's a cool downtown. I think people will like it.
They don't have a lot of shit.
Like I'm saying, it's got two full fun days. Yeah. And you'll have a good time.
Two full ones. I'd say maybe 1 3/4 or 1.5 days.
Instead of hanging out at each bar for 45 minutes, hang out at each bar for 2 hours, and then you'll.
Did I tell you my Kansas City story when I had barbecue there?
No.
My buddy's brother lived there, and he's like, I'll take you to some barbecue spot. And we were in the hood,
mm-hmm.
and there was a
where
big
the good barbecue is
a big whitewashed building. It was like a one story, like kind of a, looked like a cafeteria type building, had a red door. That's it, whitewashed with a red door. The same dude did everything,
like a barn,
took your order, cooked your food, got your drinks, bust your table. That same dude did everything,
yeah,
and it was fucking delicious.
And instead of plates, it was on butcher paper, right?
Yeah, the fries that we got, he got us a big, just went like that, and huge thing of fries. They were good, man. It was good.
So it's a good travel schedule. So you can only pick one. Which one would you go to? And it's a tough one because do you go by quality of city? Do you go by purely by matchup? Do you go by like, you know, the home opener? Do you go by like the last game of the season at home versus KC, like there's probably playoff implications for that game, like similar to, you know, the stakes could be like last season, right? Raiders Chargers last game and how exciting that was.
Oh yeah.
If you could only go to one game. So leave your answer down in the comment section. We'll pin it at the top. If you can only go to one game this season, home or away, which one would it be?
RJ, I'm going to have you start off.
So I'm torn.
Yeah,
I'm very torn. And I'm torn in twain.
So, like, think of how cool the places that we're going are. So, week three, Nashville, Tennessee. Nashville may be my favorite American city to visit. It is awesome in Nashville.
Now, that is a 2 full-day packed, lots of stuff.
No. That's a month. You can spend a month in Nashville.
I don't know if I'd do that.
In the city, outdoor living, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They have a football team, hockey team. Like, there's a lot to do in Nashville.
I'm not as big a country fan as you are, so I don't know if I'm going to be hitting the Grand Ole Opry up.
You will be by the time you get out of Nashville.
I went once.
Boots scooting and boogieing to the airport, wishing you can go back.
I saw little Jimmy Dickens at the Grand Ole Opry, and I almost threw up. He was singing to a Raggedy Ann doll. Raggedy Ann, I love you. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
If you're a single guy, Nashville is the spot. There's more bachelorette parties per capita in Nashville than probably any other city, including Vegas, right?
It's a fun town for chicks, man, because it's like,
yeah,
it's really chick friendly.
And it's week three, late September, so the weather's going to be beautiful. Awesome town. We could really test our run defense, right? The first test, like real test of our run defense. And my sister lives in Nashville. So if I need to be bailed out of jail, I got someone I can call.
She will bail you out.
Yeah, she will. Oh, yeah.
She would cuss you out.
And then there's week eight, Halloween weekend in New Orleans.
That's a big one.
Halloween weekend in New Orleans.
That's
come on, you play the game Sunday, Halloween Monday.
Oh, man.
Go home Tuesday, hungover as shit with a ton of great life-changing stories. That would be a great game.
Life-altering stories. That was one of my two choices. Like that one, that one and my actual choice.
And then there's the we're definitely going to jail game. Week 17, New Year's Day, 49ers at home.
That's the one.
New Year's in Las Vegas against the old Bay Area rival.
You know why? Because fuck them 49ers. That's why.
Because you're either going to go to jail because you're super hammered and it's New Year's, because you got in a fight with Niner fans. Like, that's definitely one where you get, like, your bail bonds on speed dial.
You better keep your hands up on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your head on a swivel. Put your back against the wall. That's what you want.
And then we have two extra home games because we got, obviously, Chargers home in L.A. like always. And we're playing the Rams.
The Rams, yeah.
Home in L.A. So those are two good games as well. Week 15 at home, right before Christmas, Pats, Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler versus, you know, Belichick and their old regime. Like, all these storylines there. That one's fun.
Steelers in Pittsburgh.
That's probably the last one I'd want to go to. If I had to pick one game where I don't want to go to, it'd probably be New Year's.
Fucked up. Christmas Eve
in Pittsburgh. Cold, crappy. Travel in and out of there is going to suck.
The only thing I like about Pittsburgh is they have like the roast beef sandwiches with the fries in them and the gravy on top.
Yeah. So that's basically delicious. You want to travel all the way to the other side of the continent to take one less step with your order. Like, you can just put the fries in the sandwich yourself.
It's so not the same, man.
You don't need the guy with the plastic glove to do it for you to enjoy it.
And there's also a football game going on.
Seattle's a cool town.
Seattle's fun. A lot of craft breweries over there. Yeah.
And that should be an ass kicking. Seattle's going to suck. That's one of like the few, like probably pretty easy games on this, like the very few easy games on the schedule. I just gave you like 10, Soto. Which one are you going to?
Yeah. It's Niners. New Year's. That's gotta be the one. That's the one. I can't stand fucking 49er fans. Mm-hmm. It's like they swear they're like God's gift to everything. And
Jerry Rice hasn't played there in like 20 years, right? Like Niners, like,
dude. And then they start talking all this shit. Like, didn't they get busted by the NFL for giving like illegal contracts out, like in like the late 80s and shit? Like, come on, man. If you're gonna like talk all this stuff about your team, just tell everything. Don't tell the stuff that you want to tell. They're just annoying as fuck, dude. I hate 49er fans, dude. They try to be Raider fans, and then when they get beat up, they fucking call the cops. It's like, no Raider fan's going to fucking call the cops if they get beat up. It's like, oh, I lost that one. On to the next. They're the first ones to freaking call the police, little bitches.
It's a fan base of full Karens. You know what I mean?
Karens and Kyles, man. That's who they are. All
Oakley's Karens on, ready to call the phone. Yep.
They have Oakley's with the little fucking dongles on them so they don't fucking lose them and shit. Mm-hmm. Fucking 49 are all in the
phone. As they're whipping their phone out to call the cops super fast, they don't want their glasses to fall off, so you need that safety harness, you know?
They're such bitches, man. I hate 49er fans.
It's a tough schedule. Luckily, it's not a crazy travel schedule like the Raiders normally have to have, right? Because we're playing the NFC West, which is, bam, four games on the West Coast, which helps. No Mexico City, no London, which we normally do. One big road trip, but it comes close after the bye, week 8 and week 9, back-to-back East Coast. We're hearing reports that the Raiders are just going to stay on the East Coast.
Early games too. They're back to back early games. I mean,
they're going to stay on the East Coast, New Orleans, and then just stay on the East, and then play Jacksonville next week, which is probably smart.
Yeah, the Steelers game isn't that bad because it's a Sunday night game, so it's not that. It's a later game, so it's like kind of negating
The problem with that though is that it's like a short week for the next game when we play the Niners. That's the problem. It's an East Coast game and night game. That's why I hate Monday night and Sunday night games, because you're at a disadvantage the next week, which is why I love Thursday night games. Thursday night games are the way to go because both teams are playing a short week, but now you have three extra days to prepare for next week for a team that played on Sunday. So like Thursday night games are the best for your team. They're the worst team. They're the worst night to watch football, right? Because it's like, no one has time to prepare. Everyone's hurt. It's always sloppy football, but at least competitively, it's doubly sloppy. Both teams are sloppy. And then the next week, you've got that. You have a long week, and they basically have a short week. The Sunday night East Coast, be fine for Pittsburgh. It'll be tough against the Niners. Hopefully, the Niners aren't that great this year, and it won't be that big of a deal. But that's the downside of on the road Sunday night, especially a really could be like a snow, really cold weather game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, McDaniels is used to calling games in that kind of weather. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll be okay.
But yeah, one of the tougher schedules. The Raiders seem to always have a tough schedule, but luckily it's not that brutal of a travel schedule, and it's an awesome fan experience travel schedule. Two LAs, New Orleans, Nashville, New Year's Day in Vegas. Be fun. Fun weekend. So let us know if you can only go to one Raiders game this season, which one would it be? Leave it down in the comment section. We'll pin it and discuss. So the big news this week, Bryan Edwards traded to the Atlanta Falcons. We gave up Edwards. He'll be a third-year player. And we gave up Edwards and a seventh, a conditional seventh, and then we're getting back a fifth. So trading him for pennies. We were wondering, Soto, like I was, what does this new regime make of Bryan Edwards? Because clearly they love Davante Adams, who doesn't love Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow. So that kind of left Bryan Edwards as the number, like technically number three receiver, number four or fifth pass catcher. Where does he kind of fit into all of this? And then this, Nick Ziegler started picking up all these new wide receivers. And I thought, oh, that's interesting.
Robinson,
they weren't exactly, Cole. They weren't very Bryan Edwards-y type players. They were like speedsters and stuff like that. Not a big physical, 50-50 giant body mass catching type receiver. And we got our answer, what they think of Bryan Edwards. They'd rather get rid of him and get a fifth than have him on the team.
Well, the thing is, you only have so many spots, and you need players to fit certain roles. Unfortunately, Bryan Edwards was by far the least accomplished and, I mean, straight up the least talented of the three that do the same thing. There's Davante Adams, of course, and then there's Darren Waller. They do the same thing. They, as far as their big 50-50 ball type pass catchers to draw that type of attention. You need that speedster. You need the guy that you can do the bubble screens with. You need the guys to do the quick slants that are going to get you big yards after catch. That's just not Bryan Edwards, man. And you need guys to fit certain roles on a team. And unfortunately, he was the odd man out. He didn't show enough when he didn't have enough on tape. And I think the lack of separation and Definitely not his hands, but and his blocking ability was good, but it just lack of ability to get separation. Kind of.
If I'm a Falcons fan, I love this trade because you're giving up almost nothing for, like you said, a big body. Because the Falcons have really tried to make it clear that they're committed to the run game, and Bryan Edwards is one of the best blocking wide receivers in football. He's a better downfield blocker than Darren Waller. Like, he's a really, really good downfield blocker.
Yeah, he sticks on his corner too, and he blocks the corner. He sticks on him. He's good.
And also because he never gets separation on his routes, he's always easier to get that block, right?
Yeah, right. Just,
like, run. He's never right going to get separation. So he can always take his DB with him. So if I'm the Falcons, I love this trade. If I'm the Raiders, I like the timing of this trade, if not the value. I feel like giving a seventh for getting a fifth for a wide receiver who, in fairness, I don't think the potential has been fully tapped on him. I'm not saying he's going to be something great. I'm saying I don't think his potential has been fully explored. Uh-huh. But I do like the timing after the draft and before next season. So I feel like if Bryan Edwards' trajectory stays the same, right? Let's say who he's been the last few years is who he is. For the sake of argument, let's just say what we've seen of Bryan Edwards is who he is. That means next season, he's going to have trash numbers because he's going to be the number four guy. If he's lucky, he's the number four guy because you got Devontae Adams, Hunter Renfrow, Darren Waller, and we know how much Josh McDaniels loves throwing to running backs. Like, he might be fifth in targets next season. Baby numbers, right?
He wouldn't be fifth. He would be like seventh. Running backs would be more.
That's what I'm saying is, like, best case scenario, he's like fourth or fifth, right? Probably lower, right? And so his value is going to go, right? Mm-hmm. So I like the timing of this move by Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler. I think it kind of goes to show, like, you know, we don't want to keep fluffing their balls of the Patriot way too much, but they're always thinking multiple seasons ahead, right? Look at your player. When's his value the highest? Where do we think it's going to go? That's when we make our move, right? It's like being at a poker table, right? Like, if I flop trips, someone could catch a straight, someone could catch a flush, but I got to make them pay for it, right? I got to make them pay early to be able to stay in the hand with me, right? Or I'm going to buy the pot, right? Yeah, they know when to move when the value's at the highest. That's when it is. I just feel like they could have gotten more. Could have gotten more than a fifth for a seventh, but I don't know.
Well, the thing is, it's like, we have more hope for his potential moving forward. Unfortunately, he's shown us who he is. Now, I'm not saying he can't develop and learn some new things, but that's what he's put on tape. And although he did show some flashes, like early in the year last year, he showed some flashes. He was doing well. Unfortunately, it's the same thing that we talk about all the time. It's consistency. He hasn't shown the consistency to do it. As soon as teams start, because he wasn't a guy that teams were focusing on when he was on the field. But now, you know, after the first few games, when he was, you know, part of the trio or whatever, I think it was four guys that had over 200 yards in the first three games. He didn't really do much till the end of the year. And even then, he didn't do that much. It was Zay Jones taking over most of the targets, Zay Jones and Renfrow.
That's the big knock is when push came to shove, they went to Zay fucking Jones instead of Bryan Edwards.
If you push out Zay Jones is when he started getting more targets after the Ruggs debacle. If you put that over 17 games, it's like 92 catches and 900 yards. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like he was out there just, you know, running around and, you know, taking up attention. He was actually catching balls.
He kind of rode the wave, right? Like at the beginning of the season when Carr was throwing for like 400 yards a game and we were winning overtime games and Waller was flying. Like, everyone's, we still had Ruggs, still had our coach, right? Still had John Gruden. He rode the wave, but then when the team needed him the most,
step up, he couldn't.
Ruggs was gone, Waller was hurt. You know, John, the play caller's gone and John Gruden, he disappeared. It's like when everything was going well, he'd ride that wave. It's like, oh yeah, Ruggs is open, Wall's open. So, like, you know, or they're both double covered, so I'll get the free balls. I'll get the easy ones. When it's like, all right, Brian, we need you to step up, right? We need you to be the man here now.
It wasn't there.
He disappeared.
That Kaiser Sose. Yeah, man, it's a shame because I had high hopes for him, and that just takes another nasty black eye on that 2020 draft class that we had. It's just, I mean, the first, what, we got to our last, our two fourth-round picks we still have on the team. I don't know how much they're going to play, but the, you know, the whole first, you know, four picks in the first three, five picks in the first three rounds, stealing, yeah, right. We stole an L on that.
So what does the Bryan Edwards trade mean? What does that tell us about what we expect from the Raiders offense? One, it tells me that Josh McDaniels doesn't need a big-bodied 50-50 ball strong hand receiver, because that's kind of what he was, right? Not a great route runner, not great at separation, but he can be a big body, right? And apparently Josh McDaniels feels like he doesn't need that if he's going to trade Bryan Edwards away for pennies. It's looking to me, Soto, like he wants offensive playmakers that don't fit a specific scheme, that he wants them to be able to cover a wide range of things. Davante Adams, right? Normally you have to build a roster, you fit a certain style, right? Because if you can't afford to buy the best of everything, right? You have a salary cap. You can't have the best of everything. You just simply can't afford it, right?
Yeah, right.
So you're like, all right, let's get a certain style, right? Like the Ravens are the best example, right? Let's just be a running team. We'll be a running offense and a very specific running offense. The 49ers O-line, they're tiny, but they're fast. If you want to run off, you know, edge runs, you know, sweeps, bubble screens, they're great for that. If you're trying to play power football, or you know, have your quarterback take 5-7 step drops and block for 3 seconds, they're terrible at that. But because of the scheme, they're great. You don't have to pay a ton of money. It feels to me like Josh McDaniels wants a ton of flexibility with his offense. Davante Adams can do anything. Darren Waller could almost do anything. Hunter Renfro, more limited than those two, but for a slot receiver, he does basically anything you want. As an overall football player, he can return punts. He basically plays safety. We saw him make a great tackle. Yeah. Like, it seems to me like Josh McDaniels wants his offensive skill sets to be not specific. He wants them to be able to handle everything. And Bryan Edwards wasn't that kind of guy.
Well, the thing is too, is McDaniels is good at morphing his offense and his scheme to his team, to his players week to week. This team doesn't defend this well, so I'm going to feed this specific player or this specific group of players, and he needs them to be able to execute the offense. He needs him to be able to do the things that his scheme requires. And he has complementary pieces that are more speed, smaller speed guys, and those guys are always going to, you know, help create space, take up space, keep the defense honest. So, like you said, he's just not flexible enough he's not well-rounded enough to be one of those main guys. He would kind of like blend into the background and just be another guy. And honestly, you're paying him, you know, you might as well get something for him, because he doesn't seem like he's going to be a guy that's going to be in the game plan very often.
All draft picks after round like four are all kind of crapshoots, you know? First round picks are crapshoots in a lot of ways, right? You go to a third, fourth round pick and you're like, okay, we're rolling the dice here. And that's kind of, I feel like, the Nick Ziegler way is, let's just get a ton of draft picks late. Mm-hmm. Let's just get a bunch of them. Because that was the Belichick way, right? Like people say, oh, Belichick, he's such a great drafter. Look,
trade down.
This guy he drafted, that guy he drafted, that guy he drafted. It's like he just loaded up on picks. Mm-hmm. Like he just went the shotgun method. Like if I throw the dart at the dartboard enough times, I'm going to hit bullseyes, right? So I feel like that's their philosophy. They're like, they thought so little of Bryan Edwards, they'd rather him just be an extra roll of the dice at the craps table as opposed to the receiver that he was.
Well, the thing is too, is if you, like you said, they already have that type of pass catcher. They have two of them. And they don't need another one, and especially one that's not as well-rounded. So, you know, I wouldn't call it necessarily a crapshoot. I would say that it's not an exact science, but if you know what you're looking for, you can get good players late, and that's why a lot of teams build their rosters from the draft, because they're able to consistently do that. I wouldn't even say the first round. The drafting is not a crapshoot. It is not an exact science. If you know what you're doing, more often than not, you're going to be able to get solid contributors, if not stars, on your team that you drafted. You don't have to play. You don't have to, get in free agency. Now, if you're a bad team drafting, as the Raiders have been, it seems like more of a crapshoot because we don't re-sign our first round picks. You know, we hit or miss on a couple of guys late. Either they're stars on our team or they're not in the league anymore. So I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a crapshoot, but it is not definitely not an exact science.
I'd say it's a crapshoot because there's no one GM or head coach GM that consistently every season crushes it. There's not one person. There's guys that's
not a good definition of a crapshoot just because they don't do it every single season.
Or even consistently. Like certain classes, certain teams have gotten have been amazing, right? And then that exact same GM, that exact same staff will shit the bed the next season. The ones that have found success that have had a formula of, like, let's say the Rams, where they just trade all their first round picks for proven guys, or like the Patriots, where it's like, let's just have a ton of picks. Let's just get like 10 picks every season and just up our chances of getting somebody. Maybe, it's not super random, obviously, right? We saw what John Gruden did with the draft and how bad that was. But I think it's such an unexact science that trusting yourself too much, I think, gets you in trouble. I think you need to trust in yourself and your scouts, but you also need to trust the value and trust the numbers more. And I think this was a sign of that they'd rather have a fifth round pick. Not high. Not one where you're like, all right, yeah, well, we'll definitely get a franchise-changing player at this position. But it's just like, all right, let's just load our shotgun. Like, let's just load our gun with as much bullets as possible, and we'll eventually hit our target. And I think that's what they treated Bryan Edwards as. Just one more bullet in a 10-bullet magazine.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I wish him well, you know.
I wish him nothing but the best. Yeah, I thought, you know,
he was a guy that didn't cause
problems, you know. By all accounts, he worked hard, wasn't a cancer, wasn't an issue. He's going to a cool city, right? Atlanta. Hopefully all fun there. Wish him the best.
They're definitely looking for a specific type in Atlanta.
Yeah.
A big receivers that can go up and get balls. You know, Mariota's doing a lot of RPO. Ridder too, he can do the same thing. So definitely a type they're looking for.
A giant what if last season. Phylon. Darius Phylon. He was one of the rare players, Soto, where you, me, and Rory were all equally hyped on a guy. That never happened. For both how he was playing on the defensive line, the fact that we got him for nothing, work ethic.
He wanted to stay. Potential.
He had everything, right? Had us all hot and bothered. All three of us. Right? That never happens. Rarely. I can count on one hand how many times all three of us have had the same amount of hype for a player on the Raiders. And then
his patella explodes. I saw it happen. I saw his leg. I'm like, oh, I saw his knee.
Brutal, right? And so, but we're all thinking, all right, let's get this boy back, right? It was a one-year deal, played great. Hopefully the injury isn't, career-altering like so often it is with, you know, medical technology these days. You know, let's see where we're at. And then we saw this tweet. Darius Phylon tweeted Tuesday. They searching for something they already had. And this is one of my biggest pet peeves I've talked about a lot. Freaking NFL players love just weird, cryptic, passive-aggressive social media posts. Maybe I'm just getting old. Maybe it's just, 20-year-olds. Like, that's
how
mid-20s. That's just how they are. On social media, cryptic, passive aggressive, getting everyone all hot and bothered and not giving specifics. Maybe I'm just old, but God, I hate it. Absolutely hate it. Can you make sense of this for me?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like the rumors about Ndamukong Suh
Mm-hmm.
And they signed so many defensive tackles, and they drafted two defensive tackles. So, yeah, it's basically like they're searching for another defensive tackle that was already one in the building who wants to play. He wants to play for the Raiders.
So the rumors that, you know, Ndamukong Suh is going to come to the Raiders, I don't know how. I mean, they've shown interest, right? They've shown interest, which is fair.
I mean, you got to kick the tires, you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you don't do your you are not a good GM if you don't at least do your due diligence on Ndamukong Suh, right? At least, especially considering what your defensive tackle situation is and a complete adjustment of what you've been doing, right? And so Filon, who's he's technically a free, is he unrestricted free agent?
Right? Unrestricted, it was a one-year contract.
Right? It was one-year deal last season. And he's getting all hot. Now, maybe he knows something we don't, but it looks like he's getting all hot and bothered just because the Raiders looked at a guy who at one point was considered the future of the position.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting pissed because they kicked the tires on a guy like that. I think this is the first time I've seen something out of Darius Filon where I'm just like, eh, this is kind of weak, dude.
Well, I mean, you have to put everything together. All the defensive tackles they signed, they drafted two, and now they're searching for another potentially. That's okay. That's when he's like, all right, guys, come on. Give me a chance.
Have there been any reports of them doing anything with Darius Filon?
Nothing. I haven't heard a
nothing,
damn
right? Thing. I haven't seen anything. Brought in, looked at, interview, a workout.
Maybe he has, maybe he hasn't. I have no freaking idea. Honestly, I think that McZiegler and Champ are looking at what they have on the field now. Filon would not be ready for the opening game.
This is what Filon tweeted literally 2 hours ago. Wednesday night, 7:00. My numbers speak for itself. Your injury numbers also speak for themselves too, Darius.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, I understand where he's coming from, especially when, like you said, there's really no buzz around his name right now. You kind of maybe have to create some buzz. But, I mean.
Do you think that's creating the right kind of buzz?
Well, it's putting his name out there. His name wasn't out there.
I think Dave Ziegler's like, oh, wow, passive-aggressive cryptic tweets? Let me call this guy. He sounds like someone I want in my locker room.
Well, I mean, just keeping your name refreshed. Just hitting the refresh button, making sure your name's up there.
We'll see. Again, it was a guy like we all loved. And I think he's the type of player that can, even though the scheme is so much different than Gus Bradley's, this new scheme that's coming into the Raiders, I think there's still a spot for him. But look, if no one else is asking for him, the Raiders can play hard to get, right?
Get yourself right, and we'll see later on. People are going to get hurt. Get yourself right, and we'll see you on later in the year.
Stay in
we'll
shape. What happens. So the Raiders front office is making more news this offseason, like it seems like it does every single season. And this time, not just in sports news, the New York Times did an entire feature on the Raiders front office. Now, I can tell you that decision makers in this country and in this world, they're not reading like fan-sided. They're not reading like Raiders blogs. But when the Times does an article,
it's big.
Certain people pay attention, right? Now, the Times, I don't think, has the same influence as they did 20, 30 years ago. I don't think it's anywhere close to what they did. But for old people that read old media and still treat old media as important, they're a valuable asset to a very specific demo, right? If you're a 60-year-old rich old guy, when the New York Times says something, you pay attention generally, right? And so they did an entire article talking about how the disarray of the Raiders front office. They addressed the multiple team presidents that have been fired / let go / resigned, the multiple front office
execs.
Yeah, execs, financial execs specifically. And then they spoke to a couple employees that have been fired by the Raiders that they're saying the Raiders have done either poor practices, poor hiring practices, treated minorities or women a certain way that they shouldn't, that kind of stuff. No breaking news. They really didn't say anything that we didn't already know as a Raider fan. Now, obviously, if you're just reading the New York Times, you're not a football fan. It's all new news to you. But to you and me, Soto, there was no breaking news of any kind. They even said specifically in the article, the Raiders didn't do anything as of now illegal, right? Mostly just front office ineptness. Now, as I've said before on this show, and as I've spoken with you multiple times, Soto, like I've been in media a long time. Mm-hmm. No stories leak. No news breaks on accident. Nothing happens unless someone wants it to leak. Nothing, no stories break like this unless someone has a bone to pick with somebody. If someone's trying to get back at someone, if someone's trying to create a narrative, right? All these stories come out for a reason. This feels, looks, smells like another NFL hit job on the Raiders. This has all the makings of, let's just get negative news on the biggest platforms we can on the Raiders. We don't have new news. They're not doing anything illegal. But let's just make sure that this cycle of negativity about the Raiders front office keeps in the forefront of the news.
When you're evaluating an article like this, if you look at both sides, and you go either way with the story, how easy would it have been to take the other side, right? How easy would it have been to push the other side? In this case, the majority, if not 99% of the things that they're talking about happened in Oakland. So if the NFL was looking to uplift Las Vegas and uplift the Raiders, look what the Raiders are doing now to create a new culture. Look at where they started. And look at where they are now. Look at Mark Davis's leadership before, but look at how he's learning and look at how he's improving. Look at what he's doing now. He has a new coach, a GM. He's got a new front office. He's looking to make changes. It would have been an easy piece, an easy narrative to push the opposite way. But instead, they're really pushing this negative part. And the thing is the negative part is old now. This is going to be our third season in Las Vegas. It's years ago this stuff happened. A lot of the people that were in charge at that time are no longer with the organization. Mm-hmm. So they're just pushing all this kind of like you said, old news and old narrative because it's easy, I guess, because they have a target on their back. But it would be a lot easier and a lot more timely to see the differences now and how they're running things now, as opposed to all the stuff that happened before. You can still take the same information, right? The same info, the same ineptitude, all that stuff, but then highlight how they're doing now, and it would be a much better story, much more current story.
And I'm not even saying, and I'm not even like disputing what they're reporting on. Like, yeah, the front office has been in disarray for years. Yes, very, yeah. Multiple presidents have been fired or resigned. Multiple executives, financial executives, fired or resigned. Like, these are all true things. Well, these are all things that any Raider fan can tell you. So, like, what, again, when I look at it, like this line, the Las Vegas Raiders have been rocked by a mass exodus of front office leaders amid financial irregularities and dire management blunders, like overpaying taxes and underpaying certain employees for years. And that's as harsh as you can make a sentence and be factual about the Raiders. And it's still not nefarious. They're more guilty of having, like you mentioned, an owner that really didn't have his finger on the pulse of the team while he was in Oakland than now he is in Las Vegas. And now he's finding out about overpaying in taxes and, you know, what else, you know, other things that are going on in the front office. I don't know. It just feels like just a wave of old news to remind people of, yeah, this is an organization has been ran like a mom and pa shop for years, and we're just going to remind everybody about it.
From the time that Mark Davis took over, he, I mean, maybe a year, he really gave it a good year or two to really make it work in Oakland. After that, he's like, how do I get out of here?
Yeah.
How do I lay the groundwork to get out of here? That I from this perspective, I can understand that Mark Davis was putting a lot of his eggs in the relocation basket from early on, from like maybe like the early to mid 2010s, to like really put it out there and look for a way to get out. And this move hasn't been wasn't a quick thing. It's taken years from the time it was kind of like an inkling till everything got taken care of to finding a location to then now building. He had to build the stadium. That took a couple of years. So it's like a lot of the time that he was spent in charge was either trying to or in the process of moving from Oakland to Las Vegas. So I can see, I'm not saying I'm not condoning it, but I can see where some of the things would slip through the cracks. Whereas if he was, if Mark Davis was more concentrated on what was going on in Oakland, a lot of these things wouldn't have happened. So now that he's in the seat, everything's going good, takes an account of things, and now people's heads are starting to roll because they haven't been doing their job.
I don't know if things are starting to roll. Like, it still seems like there's more problems in the front office.
Heads are starting to roll.
Heads are rolling. And even with all this, on the field hasn't been this good forever.
Oh, yeah.
So even with all the front office stuff being a problem, the only thing that truly matters to you and me and 99% of people is what's going to happen on that green turf on Sundays. And
between those sidelines. Yeah, man.
Ready to do some what up winbacks?
You know I am.
London Raider.
My boy.
Is there a way to just thank Soto and ignore the mutation next to him?
Finally.
I've been called a lot of things in my time, in my 38 years of being on this earth and 15 years of broadcasting.
That's hilarious.
Mutation's the first time. First
That's
one.
A good one.
You broke new ground.
It's that British humor. It's that dry sense of humor.
Or maybe he's talking about maybe like the mess in the background behind you, that mutation.
It's
there something back there that's mutating.
It's a body pillow and a pair of shorts. That's on my bed. Not that bad.
Okay. So maybe it looked like a person, like his shorts are on the body pillow and looks like a mutant.
No.
No, good. He's talking about me, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Mutation. So the way that he responded, because now there's a thing called Super Thanks with YouTube, which is a whole new thing. So before, like if we're doing a live chat, you can pitch in a couple bucks to make sure that we answer your question. You can help support us. Now you can do something that even when the video is done after live video or even a video that wasn't live, you can drop a couple bucks in the comment section. It's called a Super Thanks. And it's just a way of like making sure your comments highlighted, making sure we respond to your comment, and it's a way to support us. So he was responding to that. And so to answer your question, London Raider, is there a way to thank Soto directly? I don't know. Do you have a Cash App or something?
I got my OnlyFans.
OnlyFans? Yeah. Go to Soto's OnlyFans.
Yeah,
if you want to see a mutation, go to Soto's OnlyFans.
For sure. You know, I have a new question of the day. Oh. What is RJ a mutation of?
Pure sexual energy.
Oh, stop it. Let's just move on.
Marcos Lepe? Lepe? Lepe?
Lepe.
Josh Jacobs will start and Draken White will fight for snaps. So the backfield of the Raiders is something I'm very curious about. Josh Jacobs is unquestionably, as of right this second, as of May 18th, 2022, the best running back on our roster. Uh-huh. Certain running backs can do certain things better than Josh, but he is the all-around best back we have. And so that's what I'm wondering because, and you've mentioned it multiple times, Josh McDaniels is opposite of John Gruden. John Gruden wanted a bell cow three down grinding back. Josh McDaniels wants, give me five or six running, give me, you know, four or five running backs and we'll make sure they're all very specifically skill-setted too. I wonder because Josh McDaniels runs a 21 offensive lineup more than anybody, two running backs and a tight end. Not more than anybody, but top five, like a lot. He runs a lot of two running back sets.
Yep.
So I'm very curious what they're going to do. Do you have a running back back there at all times, plus a passing back back there at all times? Do you have a block? Do you have your fullback back there most of the time? Do you go big and small? Do you go two guys that could carry the ball all the time? That's what I'm saying. I wonder if there's a guy that, like, quote unquote, starts over the other guys more, or if it's just a constant committee. And maybe there's like two guys that play more than anyone, then leave everyone else in the dust. I don't know.
From what I've seen of Josh McDaniels' offense as running backs go, he does have a running back that he uses more. So there is going to be one that's going to be used more. Just like there's going to be a running back that's used more for catching, there's going to be one that's used more for running. So there's going to be like the one that's used more to carry the ball is going to be like the basically their number one, the one that's going to be used the most. Because he's going to be throwing the ball a lot too. Because you can't just have a guy in the game and never throw him the ball, because when he's in the game, you just worry about the run. When it comes to him, you just worry about him running it. So he's going to get the most touches. But there's going to be a group of like two to three backs that are going to get very similar touches, whether they're carries, catches, or a combination of the two. So you're going to have one guy that's going to get more than anyone else, and then you're going to have a pocket, a group of like maybe two to three that are going to get similar touches.
Honestly, I feel like the guy who benefited the most from all these running backs getting picked up is Kenyon Drake. Because he's the only true pass-catching back out of the group. Like Josh Jacobs and Zamir White, obviously they're different in some ways, but they're pretty similar type style running backs. Like between the tackles, they can break tackles, hard-nosed runners, SEC-style running backs, not super speedsters, not pass catchers. They're kind of the same. And then you've got, obviously, the fullback with, you know, Jacob Johnson is basically a pure blocker. Fullback, right? We'd be lucky to get three carries this season. And then you've got Kenyon Drake as the one speedster, pass catcher type guy.
Yeah.
So honestly, it's like if there's one guy I think that gets the most love, it's the guy that stands out the most and has the most different style game. And it's Drake.
It could be. He could be his White, like he had over in New England, you know, constantly catching 50, 60 balls.
You don't have to get racial here, Soto. Every color running back has a place.
Thank you. And Zeus White, I mean, I think he caught like one pass last year in college. He caught one pass. So he wasn't throwing the ball a lot too. So we'll see. We'll see if he can show that he can catch the ball more. But honestly, barring any type of injury or anything like that, I see Jacobs being the back that's used the most. Like you said, I see like Drake being thrown the ball the most, but I do see White getting a significant contributions this year.
Yeah, I think between Jacobs, White, Drake, and Jacobson, it's like I think all four of them are going to see pretty similar amount of play. Not the same number of carries or same number of passes too, but I can see them getting almost the same number of snaps because they're all serving certain functions. We'll see.
What's going to really help White get on the field is how good of a blocker he is. Mm-hmm. If he can block and he can spell Jacobs and be that backmate with Drake, and Drake can go out and catch while White blocks, that's going to bode well for him.
We're in a good position if Jacobs gets hurt again.
I would say we're in a better position than we have been.
Because White on paper should be able to do what Jacobs does, mostly.
Hopefully.
85%. Southern Oregon reps.
Ooh.
I think this is your burner account, Soto.
It is.
If the O-line doesn't deliver, that will be Carr's excuse. These boys will be whipping boys for any team's failures. This is yet another person where it's like every single way that the Raiders could possibly fail is framed as Derek Carr's excuse, as opposed to just here's what good could happen, here's what's bad could happen, here's how the dominoes can fall, and here's how the team will win or succeed. Oh no, it's just based purely on the Derek Carr narrative. Who will get ammo in the is Derek Carr the best quarterback ever, or is Derek Carr a shitty quarterback debate? That's going to rage every single season he's under center.
I mean, I understand where he's coming from, because I get a lot of heat for saying the things I say about Derek Carr mm-hmm. when it's just a matter of perception. Adam Schein had an article that he said he called Derek Carr because of the new weapons, the new scheme, you know, advancements and improvements in the defense, and that he is a dark horse. His dark horse, his number one pick as a dark horse for MVP. Mm-hmm. The issue is it's how you frame it. I say the exact same thing, but I frame it as a lot of the excuses that we're given for Carr not winning more games and maybe not having the numbers he should for the type of quarterback that you're saying he is lack of better scheme, red zone issues, right? Lack of weapons, poor defense. And I'm like, look, he has things that are going to be better now, so he needs to improve as well. His play needs to get better too. I've been called a Carr hater just because by how it's framed. We're using the same examples, but it's just how it's framed. I'm labeled a hater. And honestly, like, could I see Derek Carr winning the MVP? Sure. I can see that happening, but he does have to play a lot better. It's not just the weapons going to make his numbers better. His play has to improve as well. So I understand where he's coming from, because I think that in either side, like, there's people that say everything is Carr's fault, and there's people that don't think he does anything wrong. And there's me, who's closer to the middle than people want to believe. Mm. I get hated on by both sides.
Well, look, I thought that last year, the whole Derek Carr needs everything to go right to succeed narrative would have died last year, because literally everything went wrong for Carr. And we still got to 10 wins, and he still was top five in passing yards. And it was like literally anything that can go wrong to a quarterback went wrong. And he still stayed the course, stayed strong, won a bunch of games, clutch when needed him to be. Far from perfect. Mm-hmm. But he led this team. I thought for sure, okay, like, that would get people to get away from the Carr. There's multiple narratives around Carr, but the he needs everything around him to be perfect to succeed narrative, I thought that would die after last season. Still very much alive. Yeah. But to his point, to your point too, with, you know, Adam Schein's example, either, like, we almost won't succeed unless either Derek Carr gets like top three MVP voting or Josh McDaniels gets like top three coach of the year voting, because those are always, it's not you're the best coach in football and makes the team do well. It's the team does something well and the new coach gets the credit for it. Right? Like, normally coach of the year goes to a guy who turned a franchise around, right? Took things that were like cattywampus, out of place, made a bunch of moves and found success. That's kind of the recipe for coach of the year, which would kind of be this team, right? Which a whole new regime, Devontae Adams move, all that kind of stuff. And then Derek Carr, new scheme, new number one wide receiver, an O-line that's very, very unproven. And if the offense kicks off, he'll get the credit for it. Like that, you know, that, and that should be how this offense goes. It's very unlikely Josh Jacobs carries this team or Darren Waller carries this team. It's going to be the scheme and all those guys playing off of each other well that's going to win for us. And the quarterback normally gets credit for that.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, it's almost like everything that Carr, like staunch Carr backers, we're saying, well, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. That's all been improved. It's all been improved. So I would say if he isn't a handful type of MVP, we're not going to make the playoffs. Like, he needs to be that kind of guy, because the team, honestly, even with all the improvements, it's still built around Derek Carr being able to execute. And when you run a different type of game plan every single week, which Josh McDaniels does, regardless if it's a more run heavy or more pass heavy attack that week, you still have to be able to execute. And we can't have the inconsistencies that Carr has shown in the past, like against Graham last year. We can't have those games and still be in the position where we need to be in to be able to go to the playoffs again. It's just not going to work because it's not a type of scheme where, okay, I know the scheme. Even if I'm having a rough day, I'm still able to kind of like pull, you know, fall back on my experience with this scheme. It's going to be something different. So he's going to be, he needs to be able to adapt, perform, and be more consistent in his play.
We'll see what he does.
We will see.
And until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbacks. We really appreciate it. Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the social medias, and most importantly, YouTube, where we have extra content you can't get anywhere else. Until next time, later.